The Forever GM never stops thinking about how to make games better. If you are one, want to be one, or would like to find one, you're in the right place. The Roundtable, where two professional game masters dig into the craft of running games for a living alongside other professionals in the RPG industry. My name is Liv.
And I'm Doc. And today we have two amazing guests, the creator of XCrawl, Brendan LaSalle, and Craig Campbell, the mind behind Nerdburger Games. And I'm very excited to have both of you on. Before we get to our topic, but closely related to our topic, my game spotlight today is two games that I've played not nearly enough of. I've run quite a bit of one. I think I've actually played two sessions of each of these games, and I want to play these games more. It is, in fact, XCrawl, specifically XCrawl Classics, but I'm going to talk about the setting itself, and Capers, which I'm going to talk about the system and the setting there. The thing about these two things that kind of meant a lot to me is XCrawl was originally when I first encountered it, was for third edition, the D20 system, OGL. It felt different from anything else that was coming out at the time. I felt like a lot of things were either the same or entirely bonkers. And it felt like the most reasonable version of what was coming out, but also like new and original and cool. And over the years, XCrawl has moved to, there's been a official Pathfinder and an official, now there's an official XCrawl Classics, which is Dungeon Crawl Classics version. But also, I've adapted XCrawl to multiple systems: Fantasy Hero, GURPS, 5th edition most recently. Recently, I heard of people doing it in Palladium Fantasy.
Really?
Yeah, just using Palladium Fantasy is like, that's really interesting.
Wow.
I've seen and heard a lot of XCrawl moving around systems a lot. And then Capers. Capers is, it's a card-based system. It was built for, I love saying this, superheroes during the Prohibition era. It moves fast. That's the thing I noticed when I've played it. It moves really fast and it feels really fun. But one of the other cool things is that, Craig, you've adapted multiple different settings to this same kind of thing.
I have.
So that's kind of where, you know, what I was looking at with those two is like, here's one that can move through settings and here's a setting that can move through systems. And that was kind of why I wanted to bring both of these up, because I think they're both prime examples of doing a setting that can go anywhere and a system that can do anything.
Very cool.
Anything to add, creators of these two games?
This is like a very unique experience we're having here. We're getting it straight from the horse's mouth.
I know, so. It's great, right?
Well, just, you know, thanks so much for playing the setting in whatever, and, you know, enjoying the setting in whatever system that you're running it in. I want to hear about how it worked out with Palladium. That's really interesting.
I know, me too.
Yeah. Thank you for the kind words. You know, Capers is the essentially flagship game for Nerdburger Games. It's the one that's gotten the most traction. It got a, you know, kind of a big game line, lots of different books and accessories. And that was one of the things that I did with it initially, was like to take it from that 1920 setting and then push that into other eras as like the universe builds, like, you know, what happens in the 20s, what happens in the 40s, what happens in the 60s. And kind of hitting on different genres within that. So it's always using the same core system, but then there's always little bits and pieces that kind of get added that fit the genre that you're doing, like a noir game set in the 40s.
I'm going to ask, Craig, I'm going to ask you this. Since I, you know, this is a round table, it's not really an interview, but I here we are, and I get to ask this question. Have you thought about doing other genres or like outside of the Capers timeline with the Capers system?
I have, and I did actually develop it to the point of playtesting for what was the original incarnation of Code Warriors.
Oh.
And so I adapted that system to Code Warriors, and I had neat ideas for doing custom cards that had like binary Easter eggs hidden inside them and all that sort of thing for Code Warriors, which is like, you know, your characters in a computer program, or your characters in a computer, you're playing a program. It ended up, I couldn't get it, like in my head, it didn't really want to mesh quite the way I wanted. I ran some playtests. I brought it to Gen Con. I playtested with some people that I didn't know, you know, and ultimately ended up kind of putting it on the shelf with the intention of kind of getting back to it and modifying, figuring out what I needed to do. And then I ended up developing Code Warriors with a different game system, which I developed myself, which I, you know, I used, I've iterated that system through multiple games and genres. So I think Capers could work perfectly well for a number of different games, kind of genres and styles. I've only built it within the Capers universe, never quite broke into another area.
It does feel like, oh, well, I want to explore this timeline or this time period in this timeline. So, you know, hey, it's already there. Brennan, I know you love DCC, and I have yet to play X-Crawl Classics, but I was very excited to purchase it. Have there been any systems that you would want to dip your toe in doing something official that maybe any system?
I mean, I'll tell you what, there are a lot of other systems that I would be really interested in writing something for, you know, but the idea of learning another system well enough to design X-Crawl in it and like sort of start from the ground up, having done that a couple times, that doesn't have like as much interest for me.
Fair enough.
But like, there are a lot of cool systems out there that I would love to try just to learn well enough to actually like design in. And there are other, you know, other things I'd like to write. I mean, I thought about it. I certainly have, you know, and now part of my brain is like Palladium. Let's think, Teenage Ninja Turtles in the middle of a crawl. How does that work? You know what I mean? I can't help but, you know, start chewing on it in my brain. You know, I feel like, honestly, it feels like, at least with X-Crawl, like, you know, the DCC rule system really feels like home with it. And I spent a lot of years on it. But again, you never know. This is one of the things I want to, you know, I've never had the choice of what system I was going to adapt my setting to. You know what
Fair
I mean?
Enough. It
just
yeah.
sort of like fell into my lap again. So who knows? If something happened, you know, there are a lot of other systems I thought would be good fits for it. But like to do another official one, I don't know, you know. It would have to be circumstance. It would have to just fall in my lap and and happen to me rather than be something I chose. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Awesome. I was really excited to have the opportunity to kind of ask you guys about those specific things. I think so. But I would recommend to anybody who's interested I'd recommend anybody that's interested in playing fun games to get either of these games.
Cheers, man. Thanks.
B, I would recommend anybody that's interested in game design or building their own games just in general to take a look at these from a design perspective, because they both have a lot of consideration. X-Crawl Classics feels so polished and nice too. And Capers has always felt like this kind of like there's love in it. Like both, I feel like in both those books, there's a lot of love in there. So
absolutely.
I was excited to talk about that. But I think with that, we can move on to our actual topic, which definitely dipped our toe into.
If you've listened this far and you haven't understood what the topic is today, we're talking about settings and systems. And so a system as in like the mechanics by which you run your game in, the setting, the genre, the place, what really creates that world you're running in. And while I'm sitting here thinking about how to make X-Crawl and Capers as a thought experiment, the one and the same, and put them in. Now that's what I've gotten so far is like, we should have done a little thought experiment here. But let's get into our first question for the panel, which is, what are some of the best systems to adapt or convert into like other genres?
This is going to be heavily filled with, I think, probably, you know, very specific personal opinions about different systems.
Yeah.
And so let's go there.
And that's what we're here to do, Craig. Don't even worry about it.
The elephant in the room that you can talk about right out of the gate is D20 and the current iteration of the D20 system. I think it's an extremely adaptable system. It has, you know, plenty of support to do all sorts of different things. If you are going to take it into a setting and genre and a type of game that does what it does well, and that is... It, you know, to my mind, that leans in the direction of power fantasy escalating. Like, you know, you start with kind of competent characters and with a few cool tricks. And then by the time you kind of wrap out however high a level you go up to, you're, you know, pretty powerful and doing, you know, if you go very high level, you're doing some pretty, you know, nigh unto godlike things. So not necessarily the right game for a quiet behind the scenes kind of political game where if you start murdering people immediately, that's a problem and you're not going to get very far in the game. But for any game that's, you know, kind of combat oriented and wants to see the characters kind of escalate in their capabilities and their power,
yeah,
and unlock, you know, it very much has that kind of video game unlocking kind of thing. You like, you can't take on the CR12 creature until you get to be high enough level. So it's something to work toward.
Yeah.
It's a goal. Like, you know, just the stuff that's out of reach keeps you motivated and keeps you moving towards stuff. And I think there's a lot of genres that can, and a lot of settings that can support that. But certainly not all of them.
And I think we've seen that with the D20 system. I mean, Wizards of the Coast has put out so many different genres in terms of content. Like, we were talking the other day, Doc, about Spelljammer.
Mm-hmm.
And putting it into like a more sci-fi setting,
mm-hmm,
that still has that like power fantasy or still really strong characters. There's this level of competence you have. But now you're in space casting spells instead. Yes. And I think that's like a more minor revision of genre, but still shows that you can take that system and do other things in it.
I've had a lot of fun adapting a lot of different types of things into D20 and D20 games. Specifically, for me, it's always been either Dungeons & Dragons, some iteration, or Pathfinder, or lately, Dungeon Crawl Classics. And Craig's exactly right. It's a game built to have your characters escalate, and it's really built around, you know, really the exploration and adventure. So it's, you know, it's always going to be combat through and through. So yeah, if I was going to do, let's say, like a something I've always wanted to work in, it would be something like Gumshoe. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, a setting where you would, you know, where you would really would be about, you know, clues and about exploration and that kind of thing. You could certainly do a version of that with any of the D20 things. You know what I mean? Again, it being super adaptable, but you wouldn't be using a large chunk of what that system particularly is best at. Yeah. You'd be kind of leaving a lot of that on the table. Nothing wrong with that, but you know, you think maybe there's a system I can use to better do this kind of story. You know, system always informs narrative. There's absolutely no getting around that. And the type of system you run is going to dictate what kind of solutions your player is going to be best at finding and creating. Obviously, it's a role-playing game. So there's always, you know, I think about all the times we played a D&D game, which turned into, yeah, investigation or, mm-hmm, a romance fantasy or nothing but political negotiations, which isn't what it's really built for. But with the right players and the right GM, you know, any of that is possible.
I sometimes wonder, too. I mean, I think that there's a lot of systems that you can kind of say, you know, in the right circumstances will work. I mean, as I think of this, I'm thinking of like immediately thinking of like, well, not this one. But mm-hmm, I think one of the things that you can do to benefit yourself in choosing a system for the right game for you as a GM is to simply play a lot of games.
Yeah,
100%.
When somebody says, hey, come check out, I'm gonna run some X-Crawl Classics, come play that, or come, I'm going to run some Capers, come play that. I feel like, by the way, I did a lot of a wrestling podcast recently, so I feel like I'm aiming for those pops. But anyway... But when people say that, like, say yes and like sit down at the table and try them out. I had kind of decided for a long time. I ran GURPS for a lot of years, GURPS 4th edition. And I found, I mean, GURPS is meant to be pretty adaptable, but it's known as a pretty complex system. I don't think it's quite as complex as a lot of other systems. We've already mentioned Palladium on this, this podcast. Then at some point, somebody had me sit down and I played Apocalypse World. And I was like, oh, I like this. This feels good, you know? And I think for me, when I'm looking at running a new game and the company that Liv and I work for, we do Dungeons & Dragons. Like we do Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition. Sometimes we do iterations therein, but that's what the company's meant to do. But if I'm running for a group that is new, or if I get hired to run a game for someone that is like, oh, I want this kind of setting, or I want to do this kind of thing, I'm a massive number of games that I can just look at and go, well, these are the, you know, 5-6 systems that I can kind of look at, like, what's the feel look like.
I think one of the biggest things as a GM I really enjoy doing, and to your point, Doc, is that you have like a mechanic and a system and a setting, but doesn't mean you can't pull from other things. And so I was just doing this at my community game that made me late for this recording. I was talking to some of my players and they're like, you play D&D a little differently. And I was like, yeah, because I actually really like narrative storytelling. And so I put aspects of Powered by the Apocalypse and Dungeon World into my D&D 5e and 2024 games because I don't care to roll dice and just let that determine everything we do. I want to like ask questions and give the players some agency in that. And so even though we are still playing mostly 2024 D&D mechanics, you'll see me like pop little things in here and give those players agency. And that's so fine to do. I think that as a GM, you have a lot of control on how you implement those mechanics into your GMing style and to your player's play style.
Yeah, most def.
This has got me thinking about, you know, document the comment about like all these different systems. And so I find myself thinking about like, and some of the ones mentioned, I mean, I think Fate is a relatively versatile system in large part because it's not incredibly robust.
Yeah.
Once you kind of figure it out, it's pretty straightforward. So it's very adaptable to a lot of things. And because it's not robust, it can take on, you can add, like, if you want to do little subsystems to do certain things for the setting or genre that you're working in that Fate doesn't normally have in its core rules, it doesn't overwhelm the system. If you take a very, very robust system and try to mod anything to a significant degree or add subsystems, now you're taking a complex system to begin with and making it more complex, and that can scare players. That can, it makes it harder to kind of balance and make sure that the game is doing what it's supposed to do because those subsystems and everything is going to interact with a lot more other stuff. One of the things I've done often when I've GM'd and I've been using something and doing something like this, it's been a while since I've done that because it's usually running my own games.
Yeah.
One of the things I kind of would always do with the players is let them know, like, consider everything to be under continuous playtest.
Smart.
Because we're jamming this subsystem into a game. I'm house ruling something in there, and it might not be right because we're going to have to see if it works the way it's sort of intended. And players are warned, like, if you're going to focus on this thing or that thing that's new or house ruled or modified or whatever, be prepared for that potentially to change on you after like two sessions because we suddenly go, oh, that's like incredibly powerful, or that's not nearly as interesting as I was hoping it would be. Let's make it more interesting. On the flip side of that, I think, because you mentioned Powered by the Apocalypse games, incredibly versatile as a system idea, a heck of a lot of work to make into your own system or genre, unless you can borrow easily from some of the things that are already created, because those playbooks are so specific and they're very nuanced.
Yeah.
You know, slight little changes in how those three dice results work make that playbook very different from an earlier iteration of the playbook. So that might be a tough one. That might be like expert level. If you've been GMing for quite a while, if you really know your way around PBTA, then tackle it. But maybe if you're newer, maybe stick with something that like D20, where people know more about it and are more comfortable with it, or something like Fate that's a little lighter, or like Savage World, which is kind of a middling level of robustness, but it's straightforward.
It's nice and straightforward. I will point out that the system that I was forgetting that I'd seen X-Rel adapted to was Dungeon World.
Really? To me, that's a weird combination. You know,
they made a custom athlete. They basically used the Dungeon World classes and then made a custom athlete one and just kind of went from there. I think they had some, they built a couple of cool extra
things.
Were
they doing mostly in arena stuff or was it outside?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
The one session I played in was all like in arena. So
they were doing combat the entire time in Dungeon World?
Yeah. You know, like
most of the time. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't necessarily combat. It was more along the lines of like puzzles
and traps and things,
and stuff like that. Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes more sense.
I think we've kind of touched on this next question. We always do that when a GM is sitting down and going, this is the setting I want. This is everything I want it to be. What's the first question a GM should ask themselves before deciding to adapt a system for a setting instead of choosing the one that comes with it or building a new one designed for that world?
One of the questions I always ask myself when I'm designing, there's actually a number of questions, but you asked me to pick one. So I'm going to pick one question.
I would like to hear all of them, but yeah.
The question is, what is the play experience I want the players to have? Mm-hmm. And then trying to find a system to match to that. And if you potentially need to massage some things or mod or house rule hack, whatever synonym you want to use for that, if you've started with the setting and the genre, you probably have a pretty good idea of like okay, what are the characters going to do? What's this story going to be about? Mm-hmm. What are the things that you're going to, you know, what sorts of challenges are there going to be? And then, you know, that becomes a play experience. Do you want the players to be on a power trip? Do you want the players to be secretive mm-hmm. and constantly never sharing things with people? Do you want the players to not have to roll many dice and be able to role play a lot? Like, that will lead you toward certain systems. Yeah, that's the one I would go with.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think, you know, when you're deciding to, you know, like the big question starts with, do I adapt my setting to a new system that's outside of the one that was written for it? Or are the changes I want more easily like done by just modding the original system? You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of things you can do with that by just adding a couple of sort of, you know, new things to it. I had fun running a adventure just using Dungeon Crawl Classics. But I added I wanted people to have like the ability to narratively say, well, my character knows how to do this because, so I built this flashback system for it, you know, and it cost a luck point. And basically they would say, okay, I'm going to have a flashback to a time when I learned about this kind of thing. So then we would quickly role play, you know, I said 5 minutes maximum, because you kind of like left, you know, by necessity, left everybody else out of the, you know, the scene. 5 minute maximum. Let's yeah. you know, talk about how you do it. And then hopefully there was some like to, you know, give them a quick challenge that they had to do in order to, you know, achieve whatever it is, the knowledge or the item or whatever it was that they wanted to have set up for their future, their character in the future, you know? And I had a lot of fun with that. But like, I also thought, you know, you could make a whole new system that was based around this. You know what I'm saying? You could really do a thing yeah. where, mm-hmm. you know, that was the game was, did I learn how to fight with this kind of weapon? Did I learn how to do that? And that could be all of that, you know, but it'd be a lot, you know, not that yeah. it could be fun to run and fun to design, but you got to decide if you're going to put that much time into it, or if you're going to parse all of the extant systems that you know to try to find one that most closely mirrors what you're trying to do.
Yeah. That makes sense. So, yeah, like, yeah, what would I need to do to adjust this yeah. to what I needed to do? I'll say this. There was a point where I had actually purchased the Dungeon Fantasy box set for GURPS. And upon looking through it with my regular home group, that was the first time I adapted X-Crawl to something that wasn't third edition. And it was because the way it was laid out, I was like, I don't need to do much.
Yeah.
Admittedly, with that group, like they're fun to play, but it's nice sometimes that I have to do much
it can be a necessity. You know, I mean, life is life. I don't have that much time to, you know, the older I get and the more responsibilities I have, the less I'm able to just pick up and learn a new system on my own.
Right.
And in the last several years, every new system that I've learned because one of my friends picked it up, learned it well enough to run it. And I got, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
Yeah.
What I wouldn't give for like a 2 week span where I had nothing to do but learn a new system well enough to run it with any kind of proficiency, you know, that hasn't happened in a minute. Now, there, mind you, there's really, you know, I think we're in the age of the rules light RPG. There's a ton of really easy ones that are out there. I played Into the Odd not too long ago, and I was like, I could run this in one go, you know, and actually in another one. I mean, obviously this one is designed for it, but I have two nieces. One Christmas a few years ago, we got them the box set of No Thank You Evil.
Oh, it's so good.
I know. We had such a good time. And they were like, play now. Play with it now. We're like, okay. All right. We made up guys and we played. And that obviously that's designed to be that simple and to be, you know, done with kids. So that's all out there. But like, you know, it's to learn a new, you know, I remember like the last one I tried was the Fate system.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. It looked very, very cool, but I eventually was like, I'm going to have to move on from this. And, you know, because I just didn't have the free time to put into it on top of everything else that I'm doing, you know?
Yeah. Fate is a system that admittedly, because I had that experience the first time I ran Fate too, but also that was before I had a child. And, you know, like I did a few reps with it and I was like, oh, now I feel like I can run Fate anytime. I think it's a system that you kind of just need to get the core loop kind of in your head and recognize it. And I think that's a valid point though. Like what's going to be easy to do, which wasn't really originally my point, but
I remember when I was the first role-playing game I ever worked on, me and my buddies, they were all about 11, and we decided that there should be a really good, we were so sucked into Dawn of the Dead. Mm. We wanted that to be a role-playing game so badly. It just took us like a month out of the summer with us coming up with this incredibly convoluted system, different body part hit points. And you know what I mean? It was just ridiculous, but it was a lot of fun working on it. And we played a whole campaign of it. Turns out in our system, once you become a fourth level zombie survivor, you basically were untouchable. There was nothing they could do about you. And they, you had to really screw up to do it because we had no idea what we were doing.
Yeah.
None.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But
that happens. It was fun sometimes. Though. Liv, what were we going to say?
I was just going to, I think we've kind of said this already, but I wanted to really echo, like, think about like how robust of a system you want. Do you want to do something that's really like dice heavy? Cause I know I love the era of light RPGs because I like to pick something up and run with it really quickly. Cause I'm a very busy person, but I have GM friends who want something really heavy because it gives them that depth to their story that they're telling or to the play that they're doing with their groups. And so, like, think about those systems that are a little bit lighter. I think this is funny that I'm saying that, because I think Powered by the Apocalypse is, like, a middle to maybe a little higher in-depth system sometimes, depending on what you adapt it to. And that's one of my favorite systems to use for anything. Like, I'm playing a Dungeon World 2 right now, and I'm having the time of my life.
I wouldn't call it dice-heavy, though. That's the thing. It's narratively... Yeah. Like, I think that's a system where narratively it's heavier than it is mechanically.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cognitive load for a new player with one of those games is more about learning how this game functions and why it does the things it does and why it's so different from so many other games. Mm-hmm. As the dice, like you said, Doc, the dice themselves are very straightforward.
Yeah.
But kind of getting into the mindset of a game that pushes narrative so strongly and is less about like trying to figure out when I can roll dice and why and how and where I can get bonuses and everything. It's more about just like deciding to do things and finding, you know, at certain points there will be a move that is necessary to be rolled.
Mm-hmm.
That's like one of those things that if you're looking to take any system that is significantly different from the thing that your players are used to, it's worth taking that into account too. So just from like a meta perspective, not even a mechanics perspective, it's just like how much load do I want to put on my players' brains to figure out this thing,
right?
Just because I want to run it so badly. You might have to find some middle ground there and be like one of the things I did when I ran Deadlands is a fairly robust system, and to not overwhelm my players is I made a very specific series of adventures for the first like five game sessions, where it was like the first one was like, okay, you're getting strung up to get hung. We don't even know why yet. It's a bunch of undead that are doing it. And so we're just going to start with a combat and you're going to learn the basics of combat. And then why you were being strung up becomes the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then each game session after that, I added something to it. It's like, okay, now we're going to add some of the special ability stuff. And now we're going to have weird monsters show up. And now we're going to have weird mad science make an appearance and start seeing problems happen because of that. With some games, you can do that. You could start with be like, it, even if the game system is very different, but it's going to fit the system really well. You can tell the players, be like, hey, we're going to start very narrow to keep things easy, and then we're going to kind of build out.
That's great advice.
Yeah.
As a former educator, I love building a foundation and working up.
That's really smart.
Yeah, that's really good.
Gratifying learning. Talk about a lot of different systems that people can use to adapt from system to setting, and those first questions you might be thinking of, but how can you utilize the most from a system or a setting in a new system or setting? Kind of a vice versa question there for us. Like, how do you get all the meat off the bones of something when you're putting it into a new system or setting, basically?
That's a good question.
Thank you. I wrote it.
I remember when I was reading through these questions beforehand, I was kind of like, that, I'm not sure. I had to really think about that one quite a bit.
Yeah. Have I ever gotten all the meat off the bone? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think one thing that will help you is, and this can go for either one, like you said, for system or setting, for the system or the setting, identify one or two or you know, that magic three, like we love threes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Three things that are inherent, that are like a big part of that system or setting, and then lean in hard.
Yeah.
Don't let that sit by the wayside. If magic is a big part of the game, make sure there's magic right away. Like have some wow factor, like have somebody cast a spell or you know, have a you know, evil wizard or necromancer or whatever it is that's just getting started out and they're low level so that you know, your players can fight them. Like have that happen. If monster fighting is a thing that's part of it, make sure there's a monster. Yeah. Like let's get a monster rolling. If part of the game is hard choices, moral quandaries, make sure you end if possible during the game session, at the very least end it cliffhanger of a moral quandary mm-hmm. that the, you know, now the players have, especially early on, because players don't necessarily know how their characters would react to something like that. It depends on how detailed they get into the development of their characters early on. But if you do it at the end of the session, that gives them until the next session to kind of figure out, you know, to kind of explore their character a little bit and figure out, well, what would my character do with this? Because this person is brand new to me. I just made them.
Yeah. I don't know who they are yet.
Lean in hard.
No, I love that. One of the things I do to kind of like sort of feel out a new setting or a new system is I'll sort of let myself play through it internally a lot of times, just differently, just seeing like imagining myself as GM and as player at the same time and thinking, what would my character like to do? What kinds of adventures would I like to see? What would I like to see in this kind of expanded world? And then also, from the other side, what kind of challenges would I want to put in front of me? What kind of play would I try to get from myself as a player? You know, a lot of that just comes into time. If it's an undertaking, something that you really are wanting to, you know, to do, for me, nothing does better than like sitting there with my notebook and the new whatever it is and, you know, manually writing mm-hmm. notes on whatever it is and really allowing myself to kind of explore the world of the game and of the setting, like of the rules under the setting, I should say, while I'm saying, what would that look like? How could I adapt that? Using the things that already exist there, what kind of uniqueness can I put into the adventure? With being, again, whatever that is, if it is the character classes or the races or the magic or particulars of the setting, you know? The best thing, you know, the more you explore it mentally from every perspective that you can, the more real you're going to be able to make it for your characters on the fly, which is, of course, the main thing, because no matter how much you plan for a thing, they're going to go and do something you hadn't expected. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing you can do is, you know, get where you have such a comfortable feel for the whole setting that when they say, hey, you know what? We won't go there. We'll break into the drugstore instead, disguise ourselves as chemists, and then we'll sneak in. And you're like, okay, whatever you can do to get ready for that, which to me is a lot of internal work. And just imagining, just sort of like stretching your imagination out and, you know, feeling out all the nooks and crannies of whatever the system is.
You know, it's funny, as I'm sitting here, I'm like, you know, I've run two different iterations of Rifts quite a bit, the Savage Worlds version and back in the day, a lot of the Palladium one. You know, I'm still looking at that going like, how do you get the most meat off the bone in the system? And like Rifts does everything. And yet I can't say that I necessarily feel like I really, even in both those systems, got the most out of that. And I like that system, or I like that setting a lot, but I feel like sometimes it's also a little bit, well, what are the elements of a system that you're going to be like, all right, I don't need really touch on this. I don't know. I'm going to be ruminating on that question for a while, I think, actually, Liv.
Yeah.
What I wanted to kind of include in this as well is like, I guess I did premise as like how you get the most meat off the bones. Sometimes you don't need to get the most meat off the bones either.
Yeah.
Sometimes you combine birds. Sometimes you need to have like a turducken of a system or a setting.
Yeah.
That's actually how I play games. I'm really funny today because I just got out of games. I guess that's why. But no, like sometimes you just need to have like a few different things together. And I do like this, Brendan, that you're saying, like sitting down and like just thinking about all the possibilities that might occur. And mm-hmm. something that I do, I know a lot of people who play Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition of 2024. And so thinking like, okay, I'm going to put them into like a different setting or a different system. How might some of those translate? And so I this is a very like minor example, but in Dungeon World 2, you can, I think it's called a spout lore role. That's like making a history check. Mm-hmm. And like thinking about those things that go back and forth between systems, like common languages between RPGs, so that people can have that better understanding as you're playing with them, because it can be kind of hard to change settings and systems.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
One of my biggest GMing regrets is I ran a game of Call of Cthulhu, which, as we know, is more investigative. It was a regret to run Call of Cthulhu. I love Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
But I ran a campaign of Call of Cthulhu, but I did it with people who had only played like Dungeons & Dragons 2024. And we know that's a very like investigative story. That's like a lot of horror. And I don't think we got anywhere near cosmic horror to like session three. Because that just was not the way that group ran. Like, they just kind of, they went for all these different things. And I had to be like, hey, guys, you will die.
Yeah, these things will eat you.
You try to, like, jump the mob in this city.
Yeah.
You can't. So, like, think about those things and the systems as well, which I think everyone touched on, but I wanted to elaborate.
Players learn how to do things from the system that they play the most of, you know? So sometimes you'll sit down with someone, especially when they're trying to play a new game, and they'll actually say things like, oh, well, all right, can I have a perception roll to see if I recognize this, when that's not a system of whatever it is that you're using, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, again, talk about the universal language of role-playing games. That's easy enough to translate into whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Up to and including games like, where, you know, like Gumshoe, like, where if you're looking for it and it's there, you find it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know, so it's, but it can be challenging to get players to think outside of their native thought language. You know, and yeah. That's it. And in any discipline, really, but role-playing games very much so.
That's a really good way of summarizing it.
How do you determine which mechanics support the new setting and which ones need to be redesigned?
Playtest, baby.
Yeah, playtest.
Yeah,
where
I was.
Playtest. You gotta try it.
That's maybe number two for me. Number one would be, sometimes it's just obvious.
Yeah.
Like, there's some things that are going to be like, okay, that does not fit at all. That's going to need to be redesigned, or I'm going to need to roll it into the other system or whatever. And then I think what Brendan said is pretty much spot on, that, you know, if you're doing this with a home group or whatever, and just like I said before, like, let them know we're trying this out. We're going to tweak this, the first few game sessions, we might end up having to modify how this works. And I think importantly too, it can be useful as the GM is to let the players know that they can retcon their player or their character.
Yes.
If you suddenly turn the homebrew thing into something that they just don't find all that interesting and entertaining.
Yeah.
Don't force them to play your modded version where you finally got it balanced and they were like, it just doesn't, it's not what I want to do. Have your character, have the character undergo some sort of epiphany or just, you know, whatever it takes. I have zero problem with retconning after the, you know, anytime within the first several sessions, because, you know, you don't know.
One of the things
players don't know for sure how they're going to play the character, or whether or not that's, you know, maybe I picked the wrong class. Maybe like my character's mindset. I picked a fighter, but I'm all of a sudden being like all good and stalwart and vigilance and justice. And I should have been a paladin, you know?
One of the things I bring up on a regular basis, and I'm so glad someone else said it, is that, like, yeah, players might not know exactly what they want when they're building out their character. And, you know, giving them the opportunity to kind of make those adjustments. Think of television shows, especially the ones that are episodic, or I basically came into storytelling from reading comic books. Like, you go through 10 issues of a comic book, and that main character has altered. Like, there's something about that character that has changed in those 10 issues. Possibly it's because another writer came in, or possibly because it was like, oh, Spider-Man needs to be a little bit stronger than he was in the official handbook, or maybe he doesn't need to be as strong. I look at each session as like an episode where you can kind of say, make that adjustment. It's not really in the topic, but I'm just glad to hear it.
Telling everybody.
Yeah, I think also it's like remembering too that I've touched on this a few times. Even if you're professionally GMing, you're probably not professionally GMing for like critical role or like Dimension 20 or like the Adventure Zone. Like, you're not doing something probably that's being, you know, viewed as a continuum of content. Even if you are, it's okay to like make modifications as you go.
Yeah.
And I do this as a bunch of professional GM, where I'll have a kid who's like, I was playing like a tiefling ranger, but now I'm not really feeling it. I'm like, okay, they now walk into the woods and out comes this guy.
Mm-hmm.
You can always make those transitions, especially because like in professional GMing, you want to make your players are in a sense kind of your clients. And so you want to make sure that they're having fun with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I always think too as well. And the party will adjust if their friend Bob is no longer here and now Tob is instead. Like, it will be okay.
Bob and Tob.
Those
crazy cats.
No one's ever been named. Bob and Tob. I do think I did have a player once who was like, I am, I forget, it was something similar. I had a kid who did that on me one day. He's like, I'm no longer this guy. I'm his brother. The same name, but with one letter different. And I was like, okay.
I've had that.
It's a month.
Why not?
Yeah.
No, you're right. Ultimately, to me, the highest law is fun at the table.
Yeah.
That is the most important thing. It's kind of the only thing. And if I have a session and my friends come over and we roll dice and all we do, if we have half an encounter and we all laugh our heads off one night because we're just having a delightful time hanging out and telling jokes. That's been a great night. You know what I mean? And I don't know. Yeah. That's really the ultimate thing. So yeah, if someone's unhappy with their character or even with their arc, like, you know, I mean, like, hey, you know, I know you really, you clearly wrote a lot of things down about this city and you want us to get into the politics, but I hate it. And I want to go back to the dungeon and smack things with my two-handed sword. You know, I mean, if that's the way the game's going, you know, the best thing you can do is be like a guide for your players that shows them the things that they want to see rather than trying to like get them to do what you want them to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got to do a little of that. You know what I mean? And when you're actually playing, but like, you know, game to game, but over the course of a campaign, it's good to let your players have the kind of fun they want to have.
I've definitely done the thing where I've introduced, this is going to be the plot for this quarter of the OIDS. And like the players were like, no, this isn't good. And I was like, okay, it blows up and something bad happens. Like I just did. I had no idea what I was going to do, but by the next week I figured it out.
I've been doing YDS for like 3 years. I can count on my hand how many times we followed through on the plot for the quarter. Like that I intended after session zero.
Yeah.
They will go wherever they want to go with it.
Yeah, that's true. Running for kids is awesome.
It's crazy. Let's talk about like one core mechanic in systems that often doesn't translate smoothly when you're shifting genres or that you look out for. And maybe also so we could bring that setting in, like what's one aspect or one genre that doesn't like translate really nicely into a lot of different systems?
Superheroes? I mean, superheroes are tough to adapt to anything, I think.
You know, it depends on how combat heavy the system is. You can adapt them pretty well if it's like if you had to, let's say, put a superheroes in a Dungeons and Dragons type setting. You know what I mean? There'd be a way of, yeah, you could do it. You'd have to, you know, spells, powers become spells and things. But I don't know.
I think about this with like power scaling for anime. I have a lot of kids who want to be an anime character. Mm-hmm. And so like right now I am running a game that's basically Jujutsu Kaisen Light, and translating that like system of powers to D&D or really like any system that I'm thinking of is kind of hard because it's very specific.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I can see that a lot of times when someone comes in with like these really cool characters from anime, where it's like, I don't know. I'd have to think about how to like make Deku for My Hero Academia. I've had to think a lot about how to make Sukuna from Jujutsu Kaisen. That's been most of my thought processes for a month.
I've had to think way too many times of how to make Sans from Undertale.
Sans from Undertale is the bane of my existence. Children are insane, and I love them so much.
I think I can tell that our two guests know exactly as much about Sans as I did the first time it was mentioned.
Sans from Undertale.
Googling now.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Please do.
I think one of the systems that can translate poorly is whatever the system is for describing how hurt your character is.
Ooh, that's really interesting. Good,
hit points.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Stress, just a series of conditions, but your character doesn't die. They just suffer conditions that cause them to have penalties or whatnot. You know, like if you're taking one system into another setting or genre, if the system you're using has a really robust like wound system, like where you're going to be keeping track of where the wounds are and how that might you suffer penalties because you can't run because your leg's been shot. If you're bringing it into a system or a setting where it's like, well, I'm not going to be killing characters, or if I am killing characters, then something's gone wrong.
Yeah,
that's not going to translate well. That's just going to be a lot of extraneous garbage that players are going to get worried about because they're going to want to try to keep their characters alive, even though, you know, your game may not really be geared toward killing characters. It's more about giving them penalties and problems in other ways that become setbacks. that's one of those ones that it's done so many different ways in so many different games, and all the way from very, very abstract, like hit points.
Yeah.
All the way to very crunchy systems of like, oh, you've got, you know, after you receive 4 wound points in your arm, you have like, you know, there's some other effect that takes place now too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a compound fracture in your left tibia. And a hernia.
We've all played Rollmaster then. Is that what we're trying to say here?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Played that once for about a month in college, and then we all said
nope.
Greg, you're a better man than me. We spent 4 hours making up characters. We did one combat. Three of us fought 4 orcs, and all of us wound up with a broken hip, and it was the end of our adventuring.
Yeah.
Like, it was over. Say.
You know what I mean? Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's so funny when you think about like D20 system being like the most used system. Cause like, I know when I've translated again from Dungeons and Dragons to any other system where you're not like basically immortal, it feels like, cause you can just go to sleep and heal all of your damage. People really struggle with that. Like, people really struggle with like, oh, I got shot and now I have to like have a consequence from that. Like, I can't just like heal myself.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
There is something that must happen.
Any game without magical healing, that's always like a thing. And like, you know, like we used to play Boot Hill back in the day.
Boy.
Like, Boot Hill, it could be over real quick. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
Boot Hill. Oh, wow.
Boot Hill was great fun, but it was also the most appropriately named role-playing game ever. You'd be like, all right, I took 7 points of damage. Oh, yeah, you're pretty much over. Well, what are they going to do? I don't know. Maybe they can take you back east to the only hospital in New York.
Well, I played in a maybe 4-session campaign with somebody that wanted to run it just a few years ago. And I think that the local graveyard about doubled, mostly from player characters. It was, Boot Hill was intense. I think one of the things that I think of, I guess when I said superheroes, I realized like, did I mean that? I think what I meant was like, if you look at the Avengers of the Justice League, Batman and Superman, Thor and Hawkeye are like hanging out together.
Yeah.
Very different.
I love that that can exist in fiction. It's rare that I see, you know, it ranges from I guess I keep going back to Palladium because I'm not going to slam the system, but it's not the neatest system, but Rifts effectively ignores it. Oh, you have a demigod on your group and also this just dude who like has a stick. And you're like, how did you, who made these decisions? Oh, we're going to make sure everything's balanced. So your demigod doesn't feel like a demigod. Yeah. And your dude with a stick doesn't feel like a dude with a stick.
The best system have you ever tried Villains of Vigilantes?
Yeah.
For me, Villains of Vigilantes was the most comic book accurate superhero game for all of its issues. You know, you rolled up to see how many powers you had to start out with. And sometimes, you know, you could literally have the team where, oh, I'm the god of thunder and I have heightened charisma.
Yeah.
So I'm the talking guy or whatever, you know. You would have these mixed up groups where one guy is really good at karate and one guy can fly, shoot laser beams. He's got like a pet that can do stuff too. You know what I mean? But that's how comic books, that's tradition.
It is tradition. PhazeRip did that pretty well. I don't want to get too in the woods about that, but it is interesting that if you want the non-balanced story group, then you end up having to leave somebody out. I will say one of the interesting contentions I've seen in that is a random system recently is Mutants in the Now, which is a loving homage to the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. In character creation, if your ability is lower that you randomly roll, you get more build points. And so all the characters do feel balanced when you finish building them. Even if some might not be as strong as others, some might be actually weak, but they might have like more weird abilities and stuff like that. So that was kind of cool. Julian Kay designed that. Well, shout out to Julian.
Julian, come on the show.
Yeah.
I want to design a game now where you have, you know, classes like demigod and like super tech genius and then person.
Just my guy.
And every session is like a police ride along where the person goes along with the heroes in order to do the hero thing and see what heroes really have to go through. And then just has to try to do everything try to help, but also come back alive.
Come back alive.
If you play Dungeons and Dragons with children, you can have that. It's true. I have someone who's like ninth level spells, bah, 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 and I just have a guy who's like, I like my sword, and I'm just going to come along for the ride. I'm like, okay.
I guess I can shout this out a little bit, because I haven't done a lot shouting out my own stuff, but I came out with a game called Grok that's a game about failure, and actively tried to make everything fail, and it's actually pretty good. In the archetypes that I was working on, I have... do I have demigod? I don't have demigod. I have superhero. I have Draculas, not vampires, but they hate being called Draculas, but they're called Draculas. And Schmo. Nobody has a special ability, but everybody has a negative ability. And the negative ability for Schmo is nope, so that the GM can invoke it. And basically the Schmo says, nope, I'm done. And just that's it for the character. Roll up a new character.
Love that.
So, yeah. So I got good news for you. I think I design that.
I think a good underpowered character class that's the role-playing challenge is fun for any system.
Yeah.
And I've always loved that one of the supplements for X-Crawl has a character class, which is the Dungeon Hottie, which is the idea being that this is the reverse. This isn't somebody who joined X-Crawl and became a superstar. This is somebody who has superstar qualities and someone decided, oh yeah, we'll put you in a dungeon. You'll do great. You know?
That's the personality hire of Dungeon.
Exactly. So everybody loves them, but they're not very good in a fight or whatever. But they've got significant out-of-combat abilities, which for a game which is 80% combat and whatever, it can be really rough. But people have a lot of fun doing it and, like, you know, playing that kind of, well, I scream and run away. It's a monster. What else? What else? Of course I do. I mean, you know, that factor is a lot of fun to me.
For those listeners who are new, this is Peer Review, where we are nerds who talk about nerds who do nerd research and nerd things. And today I have a master's thesis from Jenny Royce, and it is called Narrative and Collaborative World Building in Tabletop Role-Playing Games. And I thought about this for this group because, funnily enough, in our discussions, we've come to kind of some of these conclusions that we talked about in a lot of episodes, which is like, how, as a GM, you're not just GMing for yourself, but with a group in collaboration. And so this was an interview study she did with six individuals where they talked about Dungeons & Dragons 5th Editions and how they work on expressing their creativity while also being in like these extensive rules and guidelines for how the game functions. Some of the big findings that they had from this was that people generally were like more likely to break the rules if it was creative and interesting for a narrative purpose, but also allowed them to like, it gave them some agency, but also stayed within some of those boundaries of the game itself. And I think we've talked a lot about that in terms of having a system for a certain setting that does certain things. And so I did want to kind of expand our discussion and ask us a question for peer review. How do you, as a GM, when you are shifting settings or shifting systems, give your players agency in that to create collaborative spaces?
I try to be very generous when my players want to fill in the parts of the games that I haven't filled in. You know, like, well, I talk to my entourage or I drive up in my car or whatever. I just try to, like, go with a lot of things, especially if it's not going to, like, you know, run over... Like, it's not going to make them more combat superior. Not like, oh, I go back to my truck full of AK-47s or something ridiculous like that. You know what I'm saying? But if it's just narrative stuff, I mean, I think just being generous with what you allow players to declare and then to incorporate, I think that's really important, you know? I think that's kind of a hard thing to work into a system. I think that's a GM skill that you can learn over time.
From a design perspective, it's something that you can bake into the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really do it for the GM, but you can bake the idea in there by presenting ways that can be done. Like most of the games that I've designed have some sort of point system in there where the players can spend points and they can be spent on a number of different things. And one of the things is making slight narrative adjustments and allowing them to kind of say, well, oh, my cousin works at the desk at this hotel and they owe me a favor. So like I spend a point to do that. And so, you know, they can get something out of that. They could have dealt with talking to the clerk at the hotel no matter what.
Yeah.
But they spent a resource to do a thing. And with Good Strong Hands, a game that I designed, kind of built around the idea, it's my homage to dark fantasy movies from the 80s. It's specifically designed in such a way it encourages the GM to have the players fill in the gaps on a lot of stuff. Because in the game, you are saving the world from destruction. And the players will be more invested in that world if they have more involvement in creating it, is my thought on that. So, and even so far as like in the adventures, there are upfront like loaded questions or questions that the GM can ask as you're playing. These are spots in this adventure that were left open specifically for the GM to ask the question, the players to fill it in and use that to kind of fill out some details about the adventure.
Very cool.
I like that.
And Liv, since Craig brought it up, I'm legitimately angry with myself that I have neglected to introduce you to Good Strong Hands because it is right up your alley. It really is. It's so good.
I always love a session where I have so many tabs open because I am just Googling all the things that I'm going to get to play and learn about afterwards. And this has been a great one for that.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Let's do our final question then to wrap up today's discussion. What's one thing you wish every player understood about how we, the GMs and the game designers, harmonize the setting and the systems that we play in?
I think the answer has kind of come up, like, be adaptable.
Yeah.
You have your vision and we're collaborating. We talked, you know, about the collaboration of it.
Yeah.
And when that moment comes where the player is going to use whatever weird magic thing your setting has, if it has it, you know, if it be that the magic or superpowers or the force or whatever, and they're going to use it in a way that it just wasn't intended to happen. Like, you know, give them a roll and see what happens.
That's a good point. You know, be collaborative, and you know, there's a kind of oppositional player who's there to stymie the GM, and no one likes that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's never fun.
This role isn't for this thing.
You know what I'm saying? You know, like, you're just like, what are you doing?
One of the tacks I take with design and GMing is to try to make it clear in the text of the game that you're reading or at the table with the players that everything I'm doing here is intended to give you fun.
Yeah.
I'm not out to get you. I'm not out to screw you. I'm a player too. Mm-hmm. I want you to succeed. I want the bad guy to be defeated. I'm going to make it tough. I'm going to make you work for it.
Yeah.
But I'm ultimately at least 25% on your side.
At the very least.
Quantifiably.
Some amount.
Yeah.
I want the players to understand that, you know, nothing is going into this that's supposed to be a problem.
Yeah.
That's supposed to make you shake your head or be angry. And then that plays into all of your communication at the table. And if something's not working and not doing that, and all the players are kind of like, well, this isn't fun. This thing that you added is like, okay, well, gone. It's kind of like, it's out, and we'll put something, we'll try a different version, or we just won't do that thing or whatever.
That makes me want just a reminder for speaking specifically to GMs. I think, especially if you're starting off, I mean, I guess all of this has been kind of like implicit in everything we said, but I want to say it, you know, directly, like the worst thing you can be as a GM is adversarial against your players. The worst thing you can do is set to like, all right, I'm really going to get these guys. That's not your job. That's the wrong kind of play a board game. If you want to play, you know, roughhouse or something like that. If you want to, you know, go directly or any kind of tabletop war games, but like the GM, you know, you shouldn't be trying to kill your players. You shouldn't be trying to give them a bad time. You certainly shouldn't be trying to get one over on them. It all should be about creating a fun story. By fun, it has to be challenging or it won't be fun. There have to be consequences for failure or it'll snap you out of it and it won't be fun. But to create a really the most fun you can create at the table with the tools that you have from your role-playing game and the input of your players.
Ditto.
There is too this moment where as you're playing and you know that you've kind of done the right thing, and I've had it happen a few times where the players look at you and go, you know, it'd be kind of fun for the story right here if our characters all died. What? Okay.
And sometimes it's the way you gotta go.
I love like making up new characters. You know what I mean? Like I like love to make up new characters. And one of the ways I learn new systems is I just make up a bunch of characters or I adapt characters from other games into them. Like, I mean, I can't get enough of that. I get that there's that need of like, oh, you know what? If we all died here and then we could play the next guys coming up.
The backups.
That's a it's a real urge.
Trying to figure out what happened to our old guys.
Before we go, I'd like to give both of our guests a moment to tell us where you can find them. So, Craig, can we start off with you? Where can we find you?
Sure. I'm Nerdburger Craig on Blue Sky. My website is nerdburgergames.com. You can get the games at the web store there. You can also get them at DriveThruRPG. If you want the fancy schmancy version of any of the game books that have a fancy schmancy version, and which is basically Capers, Good Strong Hands, Code Warriors, Cosmic Corsairs, the fancy hardcovers, those are the same price at the web store as they are at DriveThruRPG. So you can get a pretty, pretty sewn version there. I'll be at Gen Con this year. It's the 10-year anniversary of Nerdburger Games. So.
Congrats!
Outstanding.
Yeehaw!
Brendan?
Well, I'm also on Blue Sky at Brendan LaSalle at bluesky.com. And if you're looking for my stuff, most of it can be found on the Goodman Games web store, so goodman-games.com. I've got other stuff that's around in other places, but that's really where you're going to find the majority of everything I have done so far. And I'll be at, I will also be at Gen Con. I don't know if you might not see me, Craig, because I haven't been out of the Lucas Oil Stadium for more than about 8 minutes in the last 3 years we've gone. So, you know, but if you happen to be down there, you know, I'd love to say hi and meet you in real life. And then I'll also be at Origins this year, Game Hole Con, Long Con, and we have coming right up, Dungeon Con is going to be in... weekend after next, May 1st through 3rd in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Plenty of tickets left, so come see us and hang out with us and roll some dice.
Love it. Well, thanks for spending time with us on the Forever GMs podcast. If you want to support the show, check out our Patreon for bonus content and behind-the-scenes goodness. You can also find us on Blue... I'll go back in. You can also find us on TikTok and Blue Sky, and we're always looking for your ideas on what we should tackle next. Reach out on socials or email us at forevergms@docpalindrome.com. And remember, Forever GMs never stop leveling up the table. Goodbye.